All right, in Psalm 75, we're going to pick back up. We've had a couple of messages on this psalm, trying to understand what the Lord is communicating to us about Himself and how we can incorporate that into our prayer life and our understanding on what is happening in the world today. So let's read again this whole psalm, these 10 verses of Psalm 75. We give thanks to You, O God. We give thanks. For Your name is near. Men declare Your wondrous works. When I select an appointed time, it is I who judge with equity. The earth and all who dwell in it melt. It is I who have firmly set its pillars. I said to the boastful, do not boast, and to the wicked, do not lift up the horn. Do not lift up your horn on high, do not speak with insolent pride. For not from the east, nor from the west, nor from the desert or the south comes exaltation. But God is the judge. He puts down one and exalts another. For a cup is in the hand of the Lord, and the wine foams. It is well mixed, and He pours out of this. Surely all the wicked of the earth must drain and drink down its dregs. But as for me, I will declare it forever. I will sing praises to the God of Jacob. And all the horns of the wicked He will cut off, but the horns of the righteous will be lifted up. Now, we noted some things previously, about this psalm. And we noted that if in your translation, right underneath the Psalm 75, it might have like a little subscription there. And we learned from that subscription that this is a psalm that it was intended to be what? It was intended to be sung. And it was to be sung by a choir. In other words, there was to be a harmonization of voices, or we could even word it this way, a unity of the people of God in not only its agreement, but in its singing of it to the Lord and to the congregation of the righteous. Who wrote this psalm? Well, God wrote it, but through who? Asaph wrote that, and you'll remember he lived in troublous days. The wicked were prospering with longevity. There was economic security over the wicked ones. They were in power. They had the material well-being. They had the wealth. And this brought pressure upon the people of God, because when wicked people prosper, what happens inside their soul? Well, they become more and more what? Prideful. We're going to use the word prideful. They become more and more self-confident. They become more and more boasting in their gifts and their abilities and their thoughts and their ways. They become, lift up their voices against the God of heaven and talk down God's people because they're not prospering and God has forsaken them. God has abandoned you. Look at us. Look at what we're doing on the earth. And that's exactly what happens in the nations of the earth, isn't it? As wickedness strengthens and as God, and I'm using this in air quotes, as God seemingly is not doing anything, they become very stubborn in their ways. And so we learn that we divide this psalm up basically in three sections. In verse 1, you have we give thanks to You, O God. We give thanks. That's His people. In this context, it would have been the Jewish people, but it's people of God. And then in verses 6 down through the following, we again have the response of the people of God to verses 2, 3, 4, and 5. And who's the speaker in those verses? God is the speaker. And you'll notice in verse 1 you've got we, but in verse 2 the subject is not we, but I. And we ask this question, who is the I? And from the context here we know that it is the Lord Himself. And we learn several things, and we want to recover that in our memory. Verse 2, that it is God who selects a particular time to do what? To judge the wicked. And you'll see that in verse 2. When I, that is God, select an appointed time, it is I who judge with equity. And of course, there is the final judgment that we know of as the capital D, capital Day of the Lord. That's the final judgment. But there has been smaller days of the Lord throughout human history, especially with the land of Israel. When Babylon came and destroyed that nation, it was a judgment of God. It was called a Day of the Lord. And so this is His appointed season of judgment. God selects the time, not who? Not us, right? And it is true, as one commentator said, that we can get rather impatient with God's timing, can't we? And yet, it is He and He alone. Note that again in verse 2. When I select an appointed time, it is I who judge with equity. Verse 3, the earth and all who dwell in it melt. It is I who have firmly set its pillars. It's God who is doing that according to the exact time that He has chosen. And there is no one else who has the ability and the wisdom and the knowledge to make this type of judgment. Who's doing the judgment? God is doing the judgment, verse 2, and He does it with equity. And you remember I told you that that basically means level. And I gave this illustration of a scale with balances on it. And so there is iniquity on one side and there's God's judgment on the other. God always does it how? Equal. And we noted this from the Old Testament. An eye for an eye and a what? Tooth for a tooth. Now what do? Well, someone knocks out our tooth, we want to knock out all his teeth. Isn't that right? Someone hits us, we don't want to turn the other cheek, we want to just pummel him over and over and over. In other words, it's our tendency to either overjudge or not judge. The Corinthians weren't judging. They had a man there who committed incest with his own mother, and they said, that's fine. That's not judging, right? And so there are times that judge. God has the ability to make that level judgment. Why? Because He has all the knowledge. You may think you have all the knowledge, but the truth is you what? You don't. And I'll tell you one bit of knowledge that we can only suspect, but we can't know all the time with certainty unless a person tells us or the Scripture tells us, and that's the motive of a person's heart. And so God judges according to all of these things. Now note, when that appointed time, look at verse 3, the earth and all who dwell in it, New American Standard says, melt. The word there means to sway. Literally, it means to sway back and forth. Like you'll see a tree when winds come, and you'll see the tree swaying back and forth. And here I think it's referring to the pillars of the earth shaking because of the Lord's judgments coming down. And we noted, as we concluded last Wednesday, that swaying back and forth is also likened unto a what kind of a man? A drunken man. Right? They totter. They can't balance themselves back and forth. And we noted that in verse 8, he talks about a wine of intoxication, for a cup is in the hand of the Lord, and the wine foams. And we noted that in the Bible, wine has two characteristics. One, it can be like a sweet wine or a fresh wine, and in essence, it's not intoxicating. And the Bible calls that type of wine a gift from the Lord. But there is a type of wine that is intoxicating, and Solomon in his wisdom says, don't look on that type of wine and desire it. So when God pours out judgment on nations or on people, he refers to it as pouring out on them an intoxicating wine. And of course, he mixes that well, does he not? In Revelation, you'll note that it's unmixed. It's full and it is powerful. The anger of the Lord. And so, when the Lord judges, the earth and all who dwell in it melt. And he says here, and this is for our comfort, brethren, verse 3, that it is I who have firmly set its pillars. Now, folks, in the midst of God, now listen to me very carefully, removing stability from the earth, whether it be a nation or geographical region or a family or an individual, when God judges and takes away stability, it is He who gives stability. Right? Who set the pillars of the earth? The Lord did. And so we know from this two things about the Lord. He gives stability on the earth. Everybody see that? Secondly, He can take away stability from the earth. Does He do that today?
Yes.
Yes, He does. And we asked this question, I think we asked it last Wednesday, do you think our nation, and even, I'll even extend it to our globe, our world is more stable today or less?
Less.
Less. But folks, here's the great thing. You and I can maintain our stability in an unstable world because it is the Lord who gives stability. Everybody see that? That's comforting. You got a pandemic? Can the Lord put your feet, as this brother said in the music, can He put your feet on a solid rock? That's stable, isn't it? Can He hide you in a high tower? Yes, He can. He's the stability when everything else around us is crumbling. You remember the psalm? It just came to my mind. I can't remember which one it is. But it goes something like this. If the mountains collapse into the sea, and the seas roar over its boundaries, the Lord is our rock. I will not be moved. I will not fear, because my soul is set and it's stable. And brethren, I want to encourage you just at this point to understand that it is the Lord that gives stability. And even if He keeps our circumstances unstable, He can give your soul a stability in the midst of it. Is that right or is that wrong?
That's true.
That is true. Do you believe that He's the God of peace? Well, peace is indicative of stability. Right? When your soul is at peace, is it stable? It is, isn't it? And I can't tell you the number of times through the years, and it will continue until the day I see the Lord, that I've actually had to pause over something and say, Lord, I need Your peace. I need Your stability in my soul. I'm shaking right now. Have you ever shooken in your soul? And it does happen, doesn't it? We are sheep and we are fearful sheep. And folks, when sheep are surrounded by wolves, there's a tendency for them not to be so content. And that's the way it is when God's judgment comes to a nation. When God's judgment comes to a geographical area. When God's judgment comes into a home. We can have His supernatural grace and His stability because He's the one, now with the earth, but also with us. He's the one who has planted the pillars. Now folks, here's the thing. The world's stability and the world's order is whose responsibility? It's God's. Not man's. We have a responsibility. What is our responsibility? To walk in the light. That's what our responsibility is. And so when you think that the Lord upholds the universe, does He not? That He appoints the boundaries of the universe and He appoints the seasons and the times of human beings. Acts chapter 17 refers to this. This is His responsibility. And folks, mankind thinks that they're the pillars of the earth. I want you to think about that. God has set the pillars, but rebellious men think they're the pillars. Think about what's going on in our nation right now. The lifting up and the pushing forward of human government. What are they saying to you? We'll be the ones who order the society. We'll be the ones to give you security. Will be the ones who take care of you. That is not their responsibility. And you and I know government's primary responsibility is to preserve the safety of its people, not to be a business, not to redistribute wealth. But our nation, our government, and not just our nation, the governments of this world think will be the stable pillar in our nation and will make it happen. What do you think about that? Human government and men say, I'm in control. It can go all the way from controlling your daytimer personally, all the way up to mass organizations who say, we'll control what's going on. We will end all wars. You ever heard that? We can handle the climate. You ever heard that? I know you've heard that. We'll control the weather. We'll handle famine. We're going to solve all injustices. And we will do it without God. And folks, do you know what that is? That is pride. That is pride. I was telling my wife, I don't know if it was today, it may have been yesterday, but I was telling her that years ago, one of the things I thought to myself, you know, I went through all these day planning sessions and all these, you know, plan out your day and your week and all this kind of stuff. And you know what I found happening in my spirit is that I would do all this planning and all this, and then I would get mad if anybody interrupted it. And I took it to the Lord. Because I noted how well He handled interruptions in my Bible. And you know what He told me? He said, trying to exert that, he didn't say this literally, but trying to exert that type of control is arrogance. And folks, here on a personal level, here's how you can tell your level of pride is how you handle circumstances you didn't plan for. Now, what does God say to wicked people like that? Well, look at verses 4 and 5. I said, who's the I? The Lord. He's the judge, isn't he? I said to the boastful, do not boast. I said to the wicked, do not lift up the horn. Do not lift up your horn on high. Do not speak with insolent pride. You hear what God says to all mankind? Now I'm going to divide this up. I'm going to talk about this both tonight and next week. Next week, what I want to do is show you a church that ended up prideful. We have an illustration of a church in our Bibles that got into this trap. But tonight I want to talk about just pride in general. Folks, if I was to ask you, what sin do you think is the most common sin? Now, I know what you're going to say right now. I doubt there would be many of God's people that would say pride. If there's a sin that's not mentioned much from the pulpits of our churches, it would be this sin: pride. What do you think about that? Probably the sin that you hardly ever examine in your life, and I hardly examine in my life, is pride. And yet we know, do we not, that the fundamental sin of Lucifer was what? Pride. And folks, lost people share the nature of that fallen angel. So by nature, by being born once, they're going to be what type of people? Proud people. It's gotten to the place now where I can hardly hear it, but there's not much to watch on television, but I do watch some sports. And especially like track and field or something, they'll say, well, how'd you win this race? And they say, I just believed in myself. I just shake when I hear something like that. Why? There's a God in heaven who judges that. Yes? Mm-hmm. When we say things like, I did it, I'm in control, I will do this, we are following the very pattern of Lucifer, who said, I will, how many times? Five times. And he gave five things that he's going to do. And he didn't say, if the Lord wills, did he? And folks, you know James talks about this, right? James says, don't say that you're going to plan out what you're going to be doing in a year, and you're going to do this, and you're going to make this kind of money, and you're going to do all that. You ought to say, what? If the Lord wills. Now, I don't think that's a formula that you got to tack on every time you talk. I think it's a heart attitude. He's not against planning, but he's against planning with the Lord not involved on a day-by-day basis. Can he change your plans? If I was to ask you, how many of you have had things come into your life you didn't plan for? I bet it would be unanimous. Every hand would be raised. I could ask you, did you plan for that sickness? How many of you had COVID on your 5-year planner? Right? And what God says to man is this. He says, verse 4, do not boast. Now, folks, he also says to boast. So how do you reckon that? Hey, he says, don't boast. And then he says, boast. Let him who boasts, boast in the Lord. Do you hear that? What's the difference? Here's man boasting about himself and his abilities and his smart and his wisdom, and I can control it. I can do these types of things. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Instead of saying, you know, this happened, but it was the Lord who did this. Big difference, isn't there? He proclaims to mankind, do not boast. He proclaims to the wicked, verse 4, do not lift up the horn. Now, we won't turn to it, but you know from the book of Daniel that when he talks about horns, he's talking about places of authority. In Daniel, it's human government. Don't lift up your horns. Don't place yourself over other people. Don't strive to be number one. Don't have unholy ambition. Don't lift up your horn on high. And then he says, don't speak. Look at verse 5. Don't speak with insolent pride. And I've got a little line in my Bible between the word speak in verse 5 and the word do not boast in verse 4. The word insolent pride is a word that means stubbornness. How many of you ever read in your King James Bible the word stiff-necked? Stubborn. You remember that Samuel told Saul that he was stubborn. What is a stubborn person? Well, it's a person that won't listen, right? Won't hear. In this case, hear who?
God.
The Lord. The Lord. And folks, I just want to say this, that arrogancy and self-sufficiency are an affront to the Lord. You'll notice in verse 2, it is I who what? Judge. Look at verse 7. God is the judge. What's he judging? Folks, what's he judging? Pride. Haven't you read in Isaiah that God dwells with the contrite? Yes? The humble? Haven't you read that it's them that are going to inherit the earth? Pride is an affront to God. And folks, we'll look at it next week, Lord willing, but God has said, He has sworn by His name, that He will destroy human pride. And he showed that where? Calvary. He judged it at Calvary. How can you say that? Folks, God used weakness to confound the strong. Did he not? God used a humble man to confound the prideful. Did he not? He allowed his son to be brought very low so that he would exalt him. And folks, haven't you read, we've gone over this recently, 1 Peter, God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Do you see the seriousness of this? God resists the proud. That means he stands against that man or woman or boy or girl, and he stands before them face to face. In my pilgrimage, in my life, there have been probably many if I had my eyes open, but there have been several events that the Lord has undertaken in my own pilgrimage. And those major events were all major events where I didn't really even know that I was prideful. I thought I was doing the will of God. And God just came and struck me low. And coming out of that and looking back on those several events, I am so thankful. I am so thankful. Because those who increase in their pride will be destroyed. I don't want to be destroyed, do you? I want to have the Spirit of Christ. And may God keep our church. Folks, churches can get proud. Yes or no?
Yes.
May God keep us on our knees. May God keep us humble. Not stubborn, not hard-hearted, not stiff-necked, not like a horse or a mule that has to have a bridle put in their mouth, but meek and docile under the words of Christ. So let's go to him and pray.